The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
Perth Football Podcast. I am your host, Kalichio Sunwa, here for another episode of our NPL Women's Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by the incredibly talented, incredibly intelligent, best accent going around, best way to say goodbye going around, and just a wealth of knowledge of football, Sam Giddy. Sam, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you. That was probably the nicest thing anyone's ever said about me.
Well, look, we're going to
other than
gonna
my
just
mom,
keep,
I guess.
We're going to just keep it lovely here. Just keep saying nice stuff about people.
Yeah.
You have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Nice win. Not so nice performance, but all right, second one.
I hope you're feeling better because I know that you weren't feeling the best on Friday. So hopefully you got out on the weekend and caught a bit of football. I had food poisoning myself on Friday. wasn't the best feeling at all. So know what it's like to be a little bit crook.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest. But bounce back. Bounce back.
I'll tell you what was the greatest. It was another weekend of NPLW football. Some cracking games, some cracking results right the way through the league. We will get started. What I think was the game of the round, just an important game for the season and for where the two teams found themselves. It was UWA Midlands versus Mum FC. These two teams were towards the bottom end of the league, and a lot of it hasn't necessarily been for a lack of effort or lack of talent, but just it's a really, really tough league. So Tommy Dolan was actually down there, and he has an interview with Stephen Atkins to talk about. But before we listen to that interview with Tommy Dolan, we will listen to a quick insert from Ben Gilby, who had this to say about the UWA game with Mum FC.
So this weekend's round five action from the NPL Women's competition in WA. For me, the main game was the clash at the UWA Sports Park between UWA Netherlands and Murdoch University Merville, the two teams going into the round looking for their first win. The home side were out of the traps fastest, and they took the lead 4 minutes in from a fantastic goal from Michaela Thorley. It was really quite reminiscent of the goal she scored on the opening day of the season against the NTC when she lifted a shot over the top of the goalkeeper from over 20 yards. And in those early stages, Mum FC were being pressed into conceding possession. They were finding it hard to make their passes stick or to reach the intended destination. And that meant that it was impossible, really, at this stage to see them from an attacking perspective. Tiana Bertha and Taylor Reid, who offer so much potential up front, were not getting the balls that they need, with the home side looking that bit more crisper in the pass and calmer in possession. But other than Emily Dinsdale's effort coming back off the crossbar, the home team were unable to add to their lead in that period. And as the game went on, as the game went towards the half hour mark, the visitors, they settled more into the game, and some key players really started to emerge from them. I mean, Emanuela Abu Pippin Baradu's upper body strength and powerful running really started to make a mark on it. Niana Jamie was really, really interesting to watch. She's got creative ball of energy, fantastic footwork. Sophie Patience as well, great spins and twists to beat her markers. Taylor Reid was dropping back deeper to gain a bit more of the ball and get attacks moving, and slowly but surely Mum FC came into the game that bit more as a result of all of those things coming together. Patience fed Emily Dewar with a really great ball into space, but that move was snuffed out by the goalkeeper. Reid was finding more and more space in the attack, and giving Taylor Reid space is never a good thing. Shortly into the second half, it was a goal to bring the scorelines level. Tiana Bertha was brought down on the right-hand touchline. Luana Senzo-Cabello's free kick came in low, and unfortunately, Franca Dobbin turned it into her own net. Chloe Rodrigo was starting to step it up for the home side. She was an outlet on both flanks, popping up both flanks to build an attack with quick feet and a really dangerous ability to deliver balls into the box. However, though, it was Taylor Reid being that given that ability to run, which is always a danger for any defence. And she was at the heart of her side's improving fortunes as that game went on. And then with 4 minutes to go, Murdoch University Melville gained that reward. Bertha won that foot race down the middle, held off two defenders brilliantly, and then lifted a high shot into the net to secure that first MPLW WA win for her team. And of course, having dispatched Perth AFC in the State Cup last weekend, that's now back-to-back wins for Murdoch University Melville, and they'll hope that that will lead to better things for them the season ahead. Although, to the way the league and the ladder is developing, it looks like it's going to be a battle between Murdoch University Melville and UWA Netherlands to avoid the bottom spot.
Thank you so much, Ben. And Sam, what a huge, huge result for MFC away from home.
Yeah, I think massive. I think you could tell from both. Obviously, early doors in the season, they got to play each other another two times, and I think it swung Mum's way this one. But like in the next two, I still won't be able to call it. Obviously, this early doors, but I think early in the season, good 3 points underneath. I think it puts a bit of a, if I'm right, I think it puts a bit of a distance between them early now in terms of points. So I think it was what you expected, you know. But the two teams at the bottom, and again, I think you were right, and the league has gotten a lot stronger over the course of as the MPL started to grow. So I think it's no disrespect to them to say it was exactly what we expected. They were physical. They were getting into each other. They were really trying to fight for those points, really. And I actually think it was good. It was good for the league. It was good as a neutral watching it as well, because it could have easily swung. I know UWA took the early lead, but then I think Taylor Reid went through on the 44th minute. She probably could have done better on that. So that goes in at 1-1, and then does it all change? Do you know what I mean? So it's pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say they have a match winner in Tiana Bota. She, incredibly talented, has played MPL for a number of seasons, has that futsal background, and she really was like the life and saving grace of Curtin University last year. She really tried her hardest to kind of play in that team and try to keep things moving. And, you know, going to Mum FC and playing for another university team, which is brilliant, but also now having a little bit more around her that she can actually pick up the ball in these more dangerous pockets, where for a lot of last season it looked like she was picking it at defensive midfield, trying to work her way up and then try to get in those attacking positions. But the way that she chased down the ball, hassled, hurried, and then took those two delicate little touches to shift it and give herself an angle for that shot was absolutely superb. And they've got a match winner there, and it gives them a lot to build on. And look, we'll go in there and have a chat with we have an insert right now with Tommy and with Stephen, and just hear his thoughts on the game as well.
Perth Football Podcast, Tommy here at UWA Sports Park in the early Sunday kickoff. Murdoch University Melville win their first league game of the season by 2-1 against UWA Netherlands. A pretty evenly contested game on the whole. Both sides had chances, but it was Tiana Bertha's late goal with around 4 or 5 minutes to go which decided it. And I'm joined by a very happy Murdoch University Melville coach in Steve Atkins, who would have no doubt been nervous in the later stages of that game, but you must be really proud with how hard the girls fought in coming from behind in the game to then get the 3 points on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited for the girls today. It's been tough for us this season, as we know. We've got a very brand new squad, very young squad, you know, players like Georgia that come on at the end. He's 14 years old, so extremely young squad, but super keen to learn and develop. And we knew today was going to be tough against UWA because they're in a similar situation to us. So we knew it would be a hard slog, hard battle, but you know, a bit of a half-time talker, half-time just talking to the girls about raising that intensity, I guess, a little bit more aggression on the ball, and yeah, paid off in the end, and we're super pleased.
I spoke to you about it before, and I was mentioning it on the call a little bit as well, but I thought the wind played a very big part in the game. I thought UWA looked more dangerous in the first half when they had it in their favour. They hit the crossbar, which could have made it 2-0, but you guys also had some moments where you put together some nice attacks, but maybe just couldn't quite get the numbers forward to support Tiana. But obviously, with that wind advantage in the second half, that was able to happen a little bit more when Luana came on, and when you did get players breaking from midfield that little bit more, and you were able to get the two goals. Is that how you saw it in terms of that wind advantage really playing its part?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always tough against the wind, I think. So I think the girls battled hard against the wind, but yeah, it was like a tsunami. There was just waves and waves of, you know, UWA coming forward using that wind to their advantage. And we spoke about that at halftime, you know. How can we use this wind to our advantage? Can we get the ball out wide nice and early? Can we create bodies forward to then progress towards a goal? So yeah, look, the wind did play a factor today, but luckily we both got 45 minutes of it. So,
and you put plenty of numbers forward, obviously trying to keep the ball deep in UWA territory, but ironically enough, the winning goal came when it was just Tiana up front on her own. And we know she's such a classy player, she's such a strong background in futsal, and yeah, it was something of her own making, really, holding off two opponents and then lashing a brilliant shot into the back of the net. Just tell us about her leadership and how integral her role has been within this young group.
Yeah, look, Tiana, well, as we all know, has been around a little while now, and she's extremely experienced, an amazing futsal player, and she's really taken on the leadership role very well at Mum. As I said before, we've got a very young squad, so she's really taken a couple of the girls under her wing and gets to training early with Emma Ulas as well. And they take some of the young girls before training and just work on a few things, which is amazing. Never asked them to do that, but that's the type of leadership we need in such a young squad. And yeah, Tiana's amazing. Even at half time, she just said a few words to the girls as well about, you know, we were 1-0 down, but you know, we could really do this, guys. And yeah, she went out and yeah, led from the front, which was great, and super amazing goals. So yeah, super proud for her.
You suffered a heavy defeat to Perth Red Star a couple of weeks ago. You won't be the first, and you weren't the first. You certainly won't be the last. But in terms of most of the teams obviously had a week off due to the cup and the format and that sort of week off. But you guys got to go back out on the pitch last week against Perth AFC and have a win and progress to the final eight of the State Cup. So I suppose how good was it to be able to get back on the pitch after a defeat like that, to be able to go get a win, and how much of a part do you think that played in the girls having the confidence to go out there and perform today?
Yeah, very important for us. I mean, yeah, Red Star was an extremely tough game at home, 5-0 down at half time. The girls were very flat at half time, but we said, you know, we need to go out in the second half against Red Star and try and win that half. And to their credit, they did battle hard. I mean, Red Star are just a quality outfit, as we know. But then we had a good week of training, and then we obviously had Perth AFC in the cup, and it was a good opportunity for us just to, yeah, relax a little bit and go out and just work on some of those things that we worked on during the week and try and fix some of the wrongs from Red Star. So I think it worked to our advantage where we did have that extra game where others didn't, because it just kept the momentum going for us, even though we had that heavy defeat. So, and then coming in today, I said to them, you know, you had the win last week, so let's carry that momentum, let's carry that enthusiasm, positivity into this game today.
And what does a win like today do for the group overall now? Because we've seen it in previous seasons of the MPLW women's competition, sometimes there have been teams who have taken a while to get that first 3 points on the board, and that confidence does take a bit of a hit, and you're sort of scrounging around and you're playing a little bit desperately, trying to maybe wait to see where that first one comes from. But obviously you have now got those 3 points on the board, so there is obviously some belief in that process now, which is going to come from that. And what can 3 points, as simple as they may sound, do now for the confidence now in future weeks?
Yeah, I think as you saw at the final whistle, the girls were hugging each other, and you know, coaches, we were jumping up and down as well. So it's a massive boost for our morale and our confidence. But we're under no illusions that, you know, next week we play Perth. So, and we said that in the change room, you know, every game in MPL is hard. It doesn't matter where you play, what you're doing. So next week will be a tough challenge, but we did say to them, if you can go into that game with the same intensity and drive and aggression and belief that you had in the second half today, then who knows, you might give it a bit of a shake. So yeah, so we're very proud.
Well earned and well fought, Steve. Well done.
Thank you very much.
huge thank you to Tommy Dolman, who isn't here. He's currently at the Perth Glory, most glorious awards night. So he's there covering the players and covering that event. So congratulations to Tommy on being part of another great season and having his first year commentating on the league. We'll go right now to the next game that we've got on the list, and we'll take a step back into Friday night. We talked about it a little bit on the full-time whistle. There was a double from Ella Lincoln. One of them was just an individual brilliant goal where she just wouldn't take no for an answer. She took her player on, came all the way to the left-hand side, and from the tightest of angles just scored. And the reason I absolutely love Ella play is when we coach kids, and I don't know if the mums and dads want to hear this, but when we were coaching the kids, we're just like, just be greedy. Just be greedy. Get as many touches as you can on the ball. Right now at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, even all the way up to like 15s, I'm saying you just want to have as many minutes and seconds with the ball and just understand and get a good relationship with the ball. And the way she plays like she's just a kid out there. And I'm sure sometimes her teammates might be like, pass me the flipping ball. But the way that she plays was terrific. Jess Flannery got herself a penalty before Daisy Mack scored another long ranger, a la Gary Mack from Liverpool. She's just scoring bombs at the moment. Annika Stajic came off the bench and had a double. And there was a Maya Archibald long range screamer in there. You managed to catch this game on the replay. What did you kind of see or notice from the performance from Perth?
I think Perth went about and just did their job. I think we're accustomed now as the season's gone on that they're going to press aggressively right from the off, and try to get in NTC's face a little bit. And I don't think NTC played particularly well first half. I think it became quite a transitional game, which played into Perth's favour as well. But you can only, you know, that's not me saying Perth played really unwell and they got lucky by it. They won by five goal difference, right? So they have to still take their chances. And I think, you know, I think, was it like the goal, one of the goals, you have to still be able to score the chance that's in front of you, regardless of what's been given, whether it's a mistake from the other team or not, you still have to finish it. And so that's credit to them. And I think I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say that they're probably the early front contender to be challenging Perth Red Star if anyone's going to knock them off the top spot. As of right now, in about 3 weeks' time, I might change my mind again because I like sitting on the fence. But right now,
I think you might change your mind next week. Red Star play Balcatta.
We'll revisit next week, but as of today, Perth are the ones that are going to knock Red Star off the top, if anyone is going to. Okay, so in my opinion, just my humble opinion, but I think for me, obviously with the NTC link, it was a disappointing game for me to watch, but I think if I'm looking at it from a neutral perspective, some of the goals on show were ridiculous from both sides. And I'll hold my hands up on the Maya Archibald one. I was saying, no, don't shoot. And then she shot. So what do I know? I think it was a good game from a Perth perspective, not so good from NTC.
I'm just looking at the squad. And again, like, this is a team who had a lot of players leave last year and they've added a lot of players, but they play this really cohesive style of football. They're clearly so well coached and they understand exactly what they're doing. But they've also got like Sam Mathers on the bench. You know what I mean? They've got Baxter Chu on the bench. And they have our favorite naughty girl back in the league, Georgia Cassidy, back in the league. No yellow card, though, so a little bit disappointed in that performance. Charlie Wainwright had her covered, though, with getting herself a nice yellow card, so maybe she's competing with Georgia for the naughtiest girl in the league. But it also just goes to show you how well they've done to get these players back, because, you know, we kind of feared for them a little bit. I'm going to be honest in terms of saying what's going on, who have they picked up, and they didn't have the best night series. It kind of looked a little bit, you know, wonky on one end, where, you know, we're not too sure about the division or the side of the bracket that they were kind of playing in. But the football that they're playing right now, they're playing some really confident stuff, and there's a strong likelihood that they've got a midfield of McAllister, of Cassidy, of Wainwright, and of Mathers, and that's a formidable midfield for anybody.
And behind them, remember, you got Sofia Papalia as well, who wasn't doing bad. Do you know what I mean? So that's not a bad midfield. And I think, like, if there's going to be, I don't think the issue will be the football from them. I think it will be how are you going to balance, one, all the personalities, and two, everyone, because everyone complains, right? Everyone's going to complain. So everyone's going to complain, I want to be playing this position and stuff. So I think that will be Brogan's biggest challenge this year. Like, one, I mean, you can envy it, but I don't.
No. I'm just looking here, and it says here that you've got Cyril Sharrock as the goalkeeping coach for the N2C, and Cyril Sharrock is one of the greatest characters in the NPL era and in WA football. And I was down there at Morley Windmills in the amateurs game when I was interviewing Jacob Often Cumper. So listen to that on the casual football chats. But we were down there and he was there watching, you know, a friend play. And when you talk to Cyril, he is absolutely just so soft-spoken, just absolutely the nicest guy. He'll give you a minute and a half. Even if you ask for 30 seconds, he'll give you more than you asked for. But he's a crazy person on the pitch. It's amazing how that he's got white line fever. So, like, what's he like, mm-hmm. really quickly coaching the girls? Because I'm sure he's the nicest guy there as well. But I'm like, man, does that switch flip for him?
No, I think he banned the girls from going to watch him. I think he might have. I remember going to watch him when he was playing against Floriat, and I remember walking up the hill and I heard his voice and I was like, I don't think that. Someone just sounds like Cyril because he doesn't. I don't think he's really good with the girls. He's phenomenal with the girls. He's got that good. You know, when you have that good coach that has that good line of, I don't need to raise my voice because I just need to look at you and be like, hey, come on,
out. Yeah.
You know, and the girls are like, oh yeah, sorry. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, he's really good with the girls, and that's across under 13s all the way up to the senior level. So.
Yeah, I think the girls need to be banned from watching him because they'll watch him and be like, who is this lunatic?
You know, you're saying that, but there has been a number of different times where Cyril, like during a game where Cyril's been standing behind the bench or talking to me, he's like, okay, it's all right, calm down, you'll be all right. Like, he's the one calming. He's calming me down. And I'm quite calm. Like, I mess with a pen now, so I don't get too annoyed, but... He calmed me down. So, only good things about Big Sis.
Only good things about Big Sis, indeed. Listener, we'll be back with part two. We're going to have a little snippet in added here from one of the interviews that we had from the men's show. It is with Mark Madison talking about how to keep your ankles locked in a good spot and the best way to make sure you prevent ankle injuries as well. So, we'll be back right after this.
All right, and we are here, as always, with the Peak Performance's own Mark Madison. Mark, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
I think it's the first time you've been here with Nick Carter. He's also with us.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Yep, good, mate. Good. Good.
And we're having a few audio issues with you hearing the greatest man there, but you know him well enough to know that you probably don't want to hear what he has to say anyway. But if he can get that sorted out, he'll obviously chime in. But yeah, let's dive into the topic. So this week you wanted to talk about ankle strapping and ankle stability. Is that something that there's been much of a change on or a development on over the years, or would the strapping I used to get from my old physio at the footy have been the same way they do it these days?
Yeah, the consensus is, you know, by players, it's more a comfort thing. So they want to get their comfort, they want to get their support and their, you know, the confidence, basically. So that usually it happens with players that have had that ankle injury in the past. They've rolled an ankle, and I'm sure if you haven't rolled an ankle, you've all known somebody who's rolled an ankle pretty bad. I've done one or two in my time. and I've probably got a little bit of ankle instability. Now, I don't strap my ankles anymore. I have done in the past. Once that acute period post-injury is there, I've done that. But then I work on my ankles. So it's a matter of what you want to do as a player. People either go down the route then of always strapping them, always having them strapped. And I think you'll find the players in all sports that change direction the fastest, really plant that foot, want that extra support. They're the players that will probably want both ankles strapped and always want them strapped in the future, no matter how much balance work they do and how much work they do on preventing injury. So I suppose the big question is, what does ankle strapping do? It does one or two things. It provides that physical barrier and the ability to stop what we call an inversion injury. So basically when the ankle rolls in and the sole of the foot faces the other foot, it helps to stop that from happening. And the more layers of tape you put on, the harder it is to do that. So some players will like light strapping, some people like it heavy. But then there's that, what they call the proprioception. So what's proprioception? Proprioception is that internal feeling or knowledge of where you are in three-dimensional space. And tape helps to give a bit more feedback. It helps our brain to understand where we are, what we're doing, and where we're moving to and how much movement we have. So I suppose in a nutshell, that's how it works. But there's more and more of a movement now for players to become more proprioceptive aware. So those elite athletes, they'll do the balance board. They'll get on the Bosu. I'm sure you've all seen those. Half a fit ball. They're hard on one side and they're bow-shaped on the other. Get on them. Do your exercises. You know, some people like to do their squats balanced on a fit ball, but not me these days. Definitely not. But and then that helps with that proprioception and knowing where you are in three-dimensional space and understanding where your ligaments are, where your joints are, and to stop you from rolling that ankle so easily.
Right. And then finally, I think it's probably a good example of what you're talking about, especially with proprioception, which is a story of probably my worst injury playing football, and that was actually playing for Nigeria with Kelechi in the African Cup of Nations here in Perth, if you'd believe that. Came on at left back for about 5 minutes and just went to shield the ball from someone, sort of stepped in a bit of a pothole, bit of a crunch from behind, and the ankle just went crunch. And I've had many, many bad ankle injuries over the years, and usually you can sort of keep going on them even though it hurts initially, and then it will swell up over those next couple of days, and this time in particular it swelled up to the size of a balloon, and I could barely walk on it, and the physio that I went to, who I obviously won't name, given that the treatment wasn't very good, was they basically looked at it and assessed it, and then just gave me a bunch of those exercises that you're talking about, just doing some proprioception. So when I felt like I could, and some strengthening exercises, and it didn't get better for a couple of weeks until I eventually went to a doctor who said, go and get an x-ray, and it had been fractured, and there were, fractured bones in my ankle that the physio that I went to obviously didn't identify. I mean, that's obviously not them doing their job as they should be, but how do you deal with that? Because obviously the swelling would be the same and it makes it hard to determine, but what's the initial signs that this is worse than just a sprain that you need to rehab?
Yeah, so when you get that initial swelling period, just like any injury, you're going to get swelling, you're going to get heat. People are told to ice it, and there's a bit more controversy around the research with that now. Some people are saying, you know, just to keep it moving, keep the compression on it. Some people are even strap an ankle now post-injury to give you that support or put you in a brace. Now, when it is that bad, you should always have a clinician look at it. They should follow a set of rules where basically if you can't walk on it, plus a couple of contact areas, four other areas on the foot. If you can't poke or prod them without pain, then if there's too much pain and you can't weight bear, I send people off to a scan straight away. X-ray, ultrasound, sometimes with both, and then that's up to what can be seen. However, still, those ankle cracks, so they sometimes can be a minor fracture, it's non-displaced, don't show up straight away either. I have seen or heard of that with a natural physio that went and had an X-ray done. No, nothing wrong. They were still not able to weight bear 5 weeks later. Found out they had microfractures in their actual bone in their ankle, and it was all the way through the ankle, and they didn't pick it up until they did MRI. So basically, at the end of the day, can you walk? Can you move on it? A couple of days later, you should be able to put some weight. If you can't, go back to the doctors, go back to your physio, go back to emergency, wherever you went, and, you know, get that seen too, because otherwise you're going to need to be in a cast or a boot or something to stop that movement and help it heal faster.
Yeah.
And Mark, well,
I was just going to say, I'll let you have the last question of the segment. I was just going to say, I wish I'd come and seen you at peak performance all those years ago, Mark, because it would have saved me weeks of agony and trying to do exercises that I couldn't do. But Nick?
Sorry, guys. So with the strap-ins, obviously they have a benefit that can reduce the risk of an ankle sprain of around about 62%. From the latest studies that I remember reading from last year.
Yeah.
When I did a study on it about 15 years ago, it was saying that after the strapping for a 90-minute game will only last around about 20 minutes because of the sweat and the effects of it. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to say that the it lasts a lot longer now?
So over the course of time, depends on the layers. So you can go 4, 5, 6 layers of tape. The more tape you chuck on, the longer that's going to last. And at the end of the day, if you get someone twice your size careening into you from side on, you know you're going to roll your ankle. And it's a matter of probably reducing the level of damage as much as having the right shoes that fit well and being proprioceptively aware. So being able to have that balance and awareness, all those things. At the end of the day, they're going to reduce the level of the injury and help you bounce back sooner, because it can be up to 12 weeks, especially some of these high ankle sprains. And a high ankle sprain is another kettle of fish. It's where the foot usually rotates the other way, prising the two lower bones apart and tearing basically the tissues between your lower leg bones and separating that out. And that's the one you see in AFL more, where people get pulled to the ground and their foot rotates outwards. And yeah. That tends to take a lot longer to recover. Can be ongoing too. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much once again, Mark. And the best advice I can give anyone is, if you have an ankle problem, do not go and see who I went and saw, who, again, I won't mention, but you don't even need to know, because the people to go and see are Peak Performance and Mark and the crew down there. Do the best coffees, they do the best treatments. And just before we let you go, Mark, Kalichi's popped back and he wants to say hello and ask something maybe.
I was just going to say hello firstly, but I wasn't going to ask something. I was just also just going to reiterate, go and see the good people at Peak Performance. We finally have our vouchers. And so we handed one in to Austin Reynolds on the weekend, who was our Peak Performer of the Week.
Nice.
He won himself a recovery session and he won the entire Forest Field team, a 50% off on the recovery session as well. So when the season gets a little bit tough for the boys, make sure you go out there and you go see the good people at Peak Performance. And I don't know which game we'll be at this weekend, but the guys will be at games. We've now got double sets of mics, partly to the partly thanks to some of the work and the money that we've got from Peak Performance and from the Casual Football Co. and from Macron and our Patreon staff. So we now have a little bit more mics and a little bit more ability to get to more games and provide these vouchers to more Peak Performances as well. So huge thank you to the Peak Performance team.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks again, Mark. We will speak to you soon.
No worries, guys.
And we'll be back with part two after this.
All right, listener, we're back. Two more games to cover. Balcatta Etna 3, Subiaco AFC 1. A tremendous goal from Mariana Tabane. long ranger, but you mentioned that it had snow on it. She absolutely booted the ball. I think it was a misclearance. And yeah, ball ricocheted to her about 30, 40 yards out, and she just hit that thing. It almost touched heaven. That's how high the ball went. So huge congratulations to Maz as well for becoming a Hall of Fame individual for the city of Coburn as well, just recognizing her contribution to football in the local community and in WA. Faye Phillips got a double. What an absolute player she is, just getting more opportunities and just in the box as well, running, passing, moving. And I think I say her name every single week, but Lucy Jerram on the score sheet again. That left foot is an absolute pile driver, the way that she moves, and she can absolutely hit one. So 3-1 win. We're going to have a little snippet from Ben Gilby talking about that game as well, and then Sam and I will be back to talk about what we kind of saw from the game.
The other thing that really caught me this weekend was some of the qualities of the goals that were scored, but also some fantastic passing football. Balcata Etna against Subiaco was absolutely fantastic to watch at times. Both teams were playing some superb passing movements. Balcata's opening goal, wow, 12 minutes played. And there was a move that involved 11 passes, which just highlighted that raison d'etre of this Balcata team and the way Pete Rakic is setting them up. In the end of those 11 passes, Lucy Jerram gained the ball on the right, drove up the flank. She measured out a perfectly weighted pass inside to Monique Prinsloo, who in turn put in another fantastic low ball in for Faye Phillips to tap home. It was an absolute beauty of a goal of teamwork. And if you get a chance to look it up online, you need to. It's fantastic. Another brilliant goal 20 minutes later. Deanna Cook's throw on the left found Jeremy. She had a back to goal. She turned brilliantly and fed Phillips, who ran in between two defenders, leaving another two tacklers in a wake to slot home a fantastic goal. And then before the break, it was 3-0. And it came after a really pleasing on-the-eye passing move that Subi built up. Eventually, Alyssa Van Herk broke it up and came along the left, deep inside her own half, to find Jerome outside her, who then advanced into the box to finish brilliantly across Riddle and take the lead out to 3. Subi themselves came back with a goal that they really deserved for me, and it was a really quality finish again. Stella Zampogna took advantage of loose control on the edge of the box. Got a ricochet, which Rebecca Bennett headed out, but only as far as Mariana Tabain, who sent an absolutely sensational lob into the net. Some really quality play and some quality goals at Grindlewood Reserve yesterday afternoon.
Thank you so much for that, Ben. Really appreciate it. And listener, if you are listening and you haven't read his match report, go through and have a read. He does a quick review of all of the games of the week. And I think his game of the week, of course, was UWA Netherlands versus Mum FC. So go check that out. Sam, he mentions that you could see the passing combinations now a little bit more from Balcata, telling us that Rakic ball is finally starting to get in play. It's been 5 weeks in the season, plus the off-season as well. I'm sure they've got a couple new players who are yet to come into the team as we're starting to see MPL players in there. But yeah, what did you make of the performance and the passing play from Balcata?
I think again, going into it, you expect Balcata to win. I think it was, again, no disrespect to Subi, I think it was quite a respectable scoreline from their point of view. I think the difference between the two teams was Subi created a lot of chances, but the chances were half chances. So they're not necessarily, there were lots of shots, but they weren't always going to be high quality chances. Whereas on the flip side of that, you talk about the way Balcata was shifting the ball. I think it's the first goal is few combinations down the right hand side before finding someone. I think it was Faye Phillips free in the middle of the six, and that's the style of play that we become accustomed to with Pete at Perth, especially when he first started there. So, and when he was at Murdoch before that as well. And I think slowly we're starting to see what he's expecting of his team. And you know, with the big changes of the number of personnel changes as well, I think it was always going to take a few weeks, few games as well, not just because you can train as much as you want, but if you don't put it into action in games, it's not always going to come off anyway. So I think you're 100% correct. I think we're starting to see a bit of, what do you call it, rackage ball?
Rackage ball.
Rackage ball, yeah, we're starting to see a bit of that.
No, that's awesome. And I think from a Subiaco perspective, like there's a lot to still take from this game as well. They'll obviously be disappointed about the result that they had against Fremantle the previous week, but going and playing Balcatta and kind of holding them to 3-1, not to damn it with faint praise, but it's another sign of the development that they've actually been having for quite a bit now as well. So still a bit to work on, but I don't think that they would have chalked up the Balcatta result as gone, all right, Balcatta away, this is 3 points that we really, really need to get though as well.
Yeah.
Any improvements that you've kind of noticed from Subi or anything that they can kind of work on or things that you noticed from the game?
I think if you compare this week to last week or the last game against Fremantle, sorry, like I think there are a lot, they kept the ball a little bit more. I think they were a bit more patient on the ball. Obviously, I know Maz played both games, but, you know, another game under a belt with a team and things like that probably helping as well. And I think they're slowly, you can see them trying to build opportunities. I mean, they had more chances. I'm not saying that they didn't have any chances. They definitely did. They just snatched chances now. And sometimes we could maybe hold the ball a little bit, play it a little bit more just when you're getting into that final third. Because I think they're quite a young team as well, and I know there's a lot of young players in there as well, so that can always play a part in that as well, like with that lack of patience at times they get a bit nervous. So I think just keep going, because it's not bad, if that makes sense. I think you're right. I don't think Greg would have looked at the fixture list this season and gone, yeah, there's 3 points.
Must win game.
Yeah, we're going to take 3 points there. Like, I don't think that would have been a thing. So I think if you look at it in comparison in years gone by, that would have been potentially 6-7 goals against. We're sitting here saying it's a 3-1 game, and should they be upset? Like, I don't think they should.
Yeah, huge improvements from them. And we now transition to the last game. It's Perth Red Star played Fremantle City FC at home. They ended up 4-2 winners, but it didn't look like a 4-2 game. They scored the final goal in the last minute of play to round up the score to make it 4. Let me just make sure I get the team, the goal scorer who scored the goal for them. Minami Ari scoring the fourth to make it 4-2. Prior to that, Reina Kagami got her customary goal. We're going to talk about that goal as well, to make it 3-1. There was a late goal from another sighting of one of our favourite footballers, Tanika Lala, scored to make it 3-2 at the time. A brilliant piece of individual brilliance as well from Clara Halau to make it 2-1, I believe. And the two goals, I've done this the wrong way around, listener, but hopefully you're still following. And the opening two goals were scored by Kiwi Hero herself, Renee Leota, those two goals were just classic number nine play. Just
I absolute love those
classic
goals.
Number nine play.
Yeah.
Talk us through those goals, because it felt like such a throwback watching her do that.
Yeah, I think, like, if I almost want to clip them and just show some of my strikers it and be like, you see this movement in the box where it almost looks like she's hardly moving, but she's doing all the moving.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, look, this is a smart movement. Can you take that into your game? Because, and then to finish it, because you know, how many people have we seen in those positions and they miss the header or they miss the tapping, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I like those two goals. I enjoy those.
I was really impressed with the way that she actually brings the ball down for the first one. Sorry, when she brings the ball down, I think it's a long ball that gets played into her back towards the goal, takes a touch, pirouettes, and just lashes it home. And I'm going, oh, that's just classic number nine play. And I think that's something that you only get with almost 300 games for Red Star in terms of just the amount of experience that she's got.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think just being able to get that extra, not even a yard, but just create yourself a little bit of space enough to, in your next action, get the shot off. And I think, yeah, I think that was, I rated that goal.
Yeah.
For the eighth time.
Beautiful. And then another great goal that we talked about was Tanika Lala, who's just coming off playing for Perth Glory, being part of that team and scoring her first goal there. And it's not often that you see this, but she sent Emily Dudd to go get the newspaper. She's cut on the inside, she's going on the outside, cuts in with her left foot and just drills it past Gabby Del Bosco. Just a sumptuous finish. And it's so good having her back in the league. It's so good having the talent back in the league as well. And I think you made a really good point. All of these players have kind of come back from playing for the Perth Glory, and they haven't all just gone to one team. They all haven't just stayed, together, so to speak, and created a new, like, NTC Glory players who've all gone to, like, I don't know, to Subi or something like that, or to UWA. They've all gone and done their own thing. We have a Mishka Anderson sighting as well. And it's just, like, it's got to be cool to see as well from your perspective as not quite like a proud auntie, so to speak.
Yeah. How old do you think I am?
The cool auntie, the fun auntie. Cool. I didn't say mother, I said auntie.
it is nice. And I think sometimes when you see them 3-4 times a week, even if I'm not directly involved with the 18s anymore, they're all good kids as well and good humans. So like it's nice. You see these kids going from 14 and even lower for some of them, and going all the way through. And like we mentioned about Tanika coming from Kalgoorlie when she was just training when she could, like around schooling and stuff like that. And I think I'm glad she got a goal, because she's a really good signing for Frio in terms of not just her ability, but her attitude off the pitch, with her ambition to want to be better, want to improve, but also her positivity as well. I don't think, from my point of view, seeing her around NTC, she's always smiling. So, and I think that goes a really long way, especially with how we were saying, a couple of weeks ago about Frio, they need to start putting some points on the board and things. And that'll be a huge lift for that squad, just having that type of personality around the place. So,
yeah, we were talking about them needing to kind of stay together, and they've done such a good job of it. Like we mentioned earlier, Clara Halau scores an absolute screamer from outside the box. Quality hit. And then there was this moment, and I think we've talked about this before, there was this moment just before Tanika Lala kind of ghosts into to get her opportunity, where there's a throw-in and there's a clash between the two players. And this is cool because Alex Navatsis is the referee here. And as the two players clash, I think it's Pode, and I want to say it's Ari who clash into each other. And Alex Navatsis just says, play on. Just absolutely says play on. And we've talked about it so much where you're watching the game and you're like, that's a free kick only because it's women's football, or that's a free kick in men's football, but it's not a free kick in women's football. Like, where's the consistency kind of thing? And he's just gone play on. And I just wanted to say, like, that's so cool to actually see, just being like, no, actually, I don't think this is a free kick. We're not going to treat them as like these overprecious princesses or anything like that. Like, they're athletes right now. We're going to treat them exactly like we treat the men. And he plays play on, and Lala goes and scores that goal. And it's just so good to see. But I also wanted to just say one thing. I'm looking at the bench right now, right? So here it is. Kayla Belanca, who we talked about and raved about all through the preseason, does not come on the field. Reina Kagami comes on for the start of the second half. Minami Ari comes on after 67 minutes. It's Lauren Contadabali comes on after 77 minutes. Katie Ritchie, again, who we raved for her performance in the night series final, comes on after 70 minutes. And Bronwyn Studman, who we raved about the way that she shut down Jamie Miguel in that night series final, comes on at the 46 minute. It's an embarrassment of riches right now. And I don't like, I'm really curious how he's gonna keep everybody happy.
It's almost the same as Perth, right? Like, it's like he can take off Caitlin Douglas, Jaina Ridley, Misha and Olivia Wood, and Renee Leota all in the game and still and replace them with quality.
With quality.
Nice.
Like it's
that's all I gotta say about that. That's nice.
It's just gotta be nice, right?
Oh
and
yeah.
And yeah, and, yeah, and Fremantle only had like one sub that they felt that they could bring on in Maya Yo. So it's an embarrassment of riches for them. And I can't actually wait for this because next week, we already alluded to it before, but it's Perth Red Star versus Balcatta. It's a rematch of the night series final, but this time it feels like everyone's got the full strength team, so to speak. And we might be on the lookout for another talismanic footballer coming back from Perth Glory from Balcatta. Etna's perspective, we're not too sure just yet, but hearing that they might be back ready to go, but that promises to be a delicious game as well, right?
Mm-hmm. That I didn't even realize that was happening. Is that that's game of the round, right?
Sunday. Surely. Yeah. So we've got Mum SC versus Perth SC. We've got Perth Red Star versus Balcatta at Red Star Arena. We've got it's a Mother's Day classic. Why have you got this on Mother's Day at 3 o'clock?
We always play at Mother's Day on Mother's Day.
I know.
It's not my Mother's Day. I go with the England one, right? So my mom's here, yes, so it's not going to impact me. Sorry.
I'm just sad because there's only one place. This is a peek into the life of Khalid Shah, a single listener, but there's only one place that I can legitimately catch my mother on the weekend, and that's church. And so I'm going to be at church on Sunday and be like, hey, man, can we wrap up this sermon? I've got to drive from Maddington up to Joondalup to see if I can catch this game. Can we wrap the sermon up, preacher? But yeah, it's going to be an interesting week. But another good week of football, so many goals. Did you have a goal of the week or a Macron moment of the week? I've done this wrong way around. Yeah, but we'll ask you now. A goal of the week or moment of the week from yourself?
I can give you one of both if you want.
Yes, please.
So I originally was going to say the Maya Archibald goal purely because I've shouted, no, don't do it, and she's done it and just made me just sit like, yeah, okay, I'll be quiet. But I think I want to say I'm probably going to go Ella Lincoln's goal. The one where she's drifted really wide from the narrow angle. That was a joke. That was rude. So I think that was probably the goal of the week for me. And then my is it the football moment of the week?
Any moment of the week.
I'm going to say West Brom making playoffs. Because we had no money and we were going into administration. And with Carlos Corberan's army marching on and all that nonsense.
The baggies, huh?
Yeah, go on. Boing, boing.
So who have you gotten there?
Probably getting Southampton. Ugh.
Okay.
I think Leeds finished third, Southampton fourth, and then I think we jumped Norwich into fifth.
Yeah, Leeds, Norwich, West Brom, Southampton.
Well, how good would it be if... Well, it's not actually because I don't want Norwich to go up because that would mean West Brom are staying down. But if Norwich went up with Ipswich from a neutral perspective, because then you have a big...
I don't know what that means.
Oh, it's a derby.
Oh, okay.
Like an East Anglian derby. Do you want to cut that bit out?
No, keep it in there. Keep it in there.
Okay.
Listen, we've just learned something new. Just learned something alongside me.
Imagine if it's not now. I think it is. Now you've got me questioning. But, like, yeah. Anyway, West Brom to go up, which naturally means we're going to lose to Southampton and not even get to Wembley.
Naturally, my moment of the week, same thing that we talked about in the men's one, is there was a great game at Forest Field United in memory of Scarlett Oliver, who tragically passed away. And the entire football community got together, wore pink, and supported the Oliver family through this, you know, really, really tough time. So that is my moment of the week, just seeing football get together. And then goal of the week, I want to give that to Tiana Botha. Just too strong, too powerful, too precise. Cuts on her left-hand side and puts it in the top corner. It's exactly what you need from your captain at the last minute of the game to get yourself your first win of the season. So huge kudos to them.
And that is it from us. Listener, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Perth Football Podcast. Sam, thank you so much for being a part of this and joining us again for another episode. Any more for any more?
No, good from me.
well, look, with that being said, thank you so much, Sam. And listener, all the best. Be careful and be kind. And anything from you, Sam, to just say your catchphrase.
To our beat.
Bye-bye. All good for me as well. I'm going to go edit this and go watch some Housewives with the lady, because that's the best bit of bonding that we get to have right now. So, yeah, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I don't know how or why, but I've become addicted to that stuff. Don't tell her. I'm making her think this. I'm making her think that I'm watching it for her, but really I'm just like, what did Kylie do this time?
That should be quiet. Lord.